Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for ChartsAndMarkets.com. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Hi, Jim. Good to be with you and with our listeners.
Bob, we love to answer listener questions. We have several today. Our first comes from John. He writes us via email. In regards to the gold CRB ratio, and can you remind our listeners, what is the CRB ratio?
Oh, the Commodity Research Bureau. It's a long-standing commodity index.
I have picked copper as a representative example of the price of the CRB. The price of copper over the last 10 years has been between $2 and $3 for about 50% of the time. Today, copper's at $3.78. Is it possible that the commodities index could continue to fall much more and faster than the price of gold? If so, could the CRB ratio be giving a rising signal, but gold would not yet be at the bottom of the gold price cycle?
Yeah, John, good question. I came up with that a couple of weeks ago, the gold divided by commodities, because I've long used the real price of gold as deflated by the consumer price index, but that comes out once a month. So I thought, oh, let's take a look at it divided by commodities, because the two go together. So, yeah, and the gold divided by commodities index was giving all kinds of downside capitulations and sequential buys. So it's that technical excesses on the downside. And it's actually turned up a little. Nothing exciting yet, but turning up. So then, and then looking at back over, 25 years, the gold divided by CRB has a tendency to lead the eventual rise in gold and gold stocks. But it was unreliable, like maybe 1 month and maybe 4 months. So I didn't put those numbers in, just say that it leads. And so this is the foundation for the next bull market for gold, is the rising real price, which then enhances profitability of gold miners. And also you note that commodities could fall faster than the price of gold. Yeah, but all I'm using it for is not so much to forecast the price of gold in dollars, which too many people do, is to forecast the price real, which is a forecast of profitability for the industry. Always working on the gold in dollars terms is that it assumes that the dollar is really going to depreciate. And I've found there's one big name out there in the gold business that if you get a 5% pop up out of a depressed market for gold, he then comes in with the $5,000 estimate. And if you get a 10% rally for gold, that then prompts the target of $10,000. And that is very old hat, to assume that the only way gold goes up is through currency depreciation is very limited. What you want to do is know what gold does when the Federal Reserve can't depreciate the dollar, which is what happens in a post-bubble contraction. So this is building a pattern where one can buy the gold stocks, and indeed, just the other day, we we did have a technical near-term buy for, let's call it a trader's rally, maybe a bounce, but there still could be further financial problems discovered in the fall. Then that would provide the ideal time to buy the golds. But, yeah, John, good question. Thanks a lot.
Our second question comes from Andrew. Hello, Jim and Bob. Looking at the yield curve inversion, it seems like 2019 all over again. Historically speaking, how long do we have to wait until the governments and central bankers admit we're in a recession to have the all clear to start buying the market? It was about 9 months for the investment firms here in Germany to confirm the bottom by screaming, nine! Kindly regards, Andrew.
Andrew, thanks a lot. Yeah, the U.S. yield curve inverted earlier in the year. And then recently, I think on the shorter terms, there was a brief inversion. So the main thing is on our work, and we've got charts on the U.S. yield curve back to 1857. And every time it inverts, it's followed by a recession. It's quite mechanical. And the yield curve inversion, of course, is short rates rising faster than long rates, and that seems to be driven by, as a bubble culminates, there's a huge demand for short money, short-dated money, you know, margin clerks, leverage, all that sort of stuff. At the same time, there's a speculative interest in buying the long end, so you end up with just pure market forces. Nothing to do with central bank policy. It just inverts, and when it does, hey, that's it. So even in 2019, it inverted briefly, and then this is the one I couldn't figure out the time. It said, hey, maybe there's going to be a recession. And then that's when the policymakers around the world came in and shut in a panic, well, let's call it hysteria, everything down with the lockdowns, and there was a recession, but otherwise, I don't know. I'm still puzzled about this one. But anyways, what we have had since January, the peak, is it looked very much like the conclusion of previous great financial bubbles. And the unique feature of this is that when the stock market heads south, virtually at the same time, the economy heads south, and I believe this is what we're getting. Now, the big stock market may be a little oversold in here. We may have a kind of a relief rally for a bit. But changes in the credit markets have been to the negative side. That's on credit spreads widening and the yield curve having inverted. But again, thanks for your question. And thanks for the nine. We'll look forward to further questions, Andrew.
Our third question comes from Michael. Hi, Bob and Jim. It looks like that 2-year treasury rate may be consolidating to go higher. Bob, is the 2-year T-bill a good place to hide out as the equity markets may sell off later in the year? If so, should we wait for the rate to go higher after the July or September Fed rate hikes, or should one act sooner to lock the rate in before the next market sell-off?
Yeah, good question, Michael. Short rates are going to go down. And I know definitely from the 1 year down, because in a contraction, the careful money around the world goes to the most liquid items, which is less than 1 year treasuries, which that then puts in a bid for the dollar. And and if you stay in T-bills or bank deposits or, you know, that short-term stuff, yields eventually go to zero. So one of the things we suggest, and you have to find a bond trading desk for this one, is for around a 4-year good grade U.S. corporate bond. It won't default on you, and in 4 years' time, you'll get par. So, and you'll have a higher yield while you're waiting. But as I said, it's always frustrating to go to cash or to T-bills when those bill rates are going to decline to zero. So take your choice. The long end of the bond market is for traders, not for investors, because it could go all over the place. And one should, as we've been saying from over a year ago, that one should be right out of low-grade bonds. So, yeah. Now, with gold,
There is another question from Michael.
Yeah.
Will the gold miners bottom before the overall equity markets bottom? Gold miners look extremely inexpensive right now, but could they possibly test the 2020 March lows?
Yeah, this has been longstanding, is that during the final stage of a great financial bubble, gold's real price goes down, and gold miners underperform the market. In this case, let's use the S&P. And then, if that's not bad enough, underperforming, then they get whacked when the big market gets whacked, and which has been happening. And actually, I watch the exploration side quite closely because I got started in the business on the exploration side when I was a geologist. And a lot of these small cap exploration stocks have been hit very hard. So it's a totally crapped out market for that sector of the gold. Maybe some of the senior golds could still be vulnerable to the next down leg in the stock market, but we'll see that when we get there. So, and by saying that the gold miners look inexpensive now, that would be the seniors, which you can evaluate on earnings or whatever. But, we could get a pop in here for the S&P as well as some gold stocks, but I think there's still a problem with the liquidity crisis in the fall, and one should wait for the whole market to be blitzed before re-entering the gold market. And but following that, in typical post-bubble contractions, you have a multi-year bull market for the gold stocks, and not just gold stocks going up, but they would outperform the Standard & Poor's. And, of course, knowing about fund managers, you get an equity desk, and they keep looking at this sector that each quarter the gold's outperforming the S&P. So there'd be fund managers that normally would not position gold stocks, but when it's consistent outperformance, they'll have to buy it, which then adds to the fun in the gold market. But that's months and months away from us. But it's nice to be set up and poised for when the next buying opportunity comes along. And thanks again for your question.
We'll have more with Bob Hoy right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're chatting with Bob Hoy. Bob, some of the headlines that caught your attention today. The first one, the Bank for International Settlements, better known as BIS, will allow member banks to hold 1% of their reserves in Bitcoin.
Absolutely fascinating. Now, the BIS is in Europe is the Bank of Bankers, and I've long had a high regard for those guys. But anyways, this is off the wall. Maybe somebody in the research department is exceptionally bullish on the Bitcoin stuff, and it's most unusual because and of course, you know, within a bureaucracy like that, it takes a long time for a decision, a research to be done, a decision to be made, and then written up and got and out. But the sector, Bitcoins and cryptos, are in a major bear market that is not over yet. So it's an interesting curiosity, let's put it that way. And as I said, maybe somebody being bullish for too long personally on Bitcoin stuff. Anyways.
Don't we have a conservative leadership candidate, Pierre Poilievre, promoting Bitcoin as a replacement for the Canadian dollar?
I didn't see that, Jim.
I
don't know. The Canadian dollar would be more appropriately convertible and made convertible into gold, because then it restricts the ability of central bankers to be too easy with credit policies. So I think that with the political reform that is developing, and in the pressures of a post-bubble contraction, the public will eventually demand that the central banks not be allowed to screw around with the currency, and the only way you can do that is to go to a gold convertibility, and I think that'll come eventually. So
yeah, there's been a number of statements from Poilievre saying he would promote the government to use cryptocurrencies more, and he admits he's a big investor in it.
Well, that's his business, but he's also been very correct in criticizing the Bank of Canada for being far too easy and far too reckless, and he's quite correct on that. So, I just that I hadn't seen the comments on his comments on crypto, and in the sweep of things, such comments are quite limited value. So, but he is correct in criticizing the recklessness of the Bank of Canada.
Headline: CNN lays groundwork to dismiss announcement of recession as racist.
Yeah, I grabbed that one, Jim, and read the article, and the racist accusation, which, of course, I mean, nowadays in liberal circles, socialist circles, if you don't agree that 2 plus 2 equals 5, you are racist. If you oppose the notion that about runaway climate warming, you're racist. So even Bittegood, the transportation secretary in the States, a while ago said that even highways were racist. So it's the universal epithet. But this one, the racism is that there's an organization called the Bureau for Economic Research, National Bureau of Economic Research, NBER. And ever since way back, it's been the body of economists that determine whether the bottom of the recession and the tops of the beginning of the recession, tops of the booms. And the current composition of members in the NBER are all white. So they, in saying that a recession is possible, this then becomes a racist statement. So it just shows you how totally absurd the frantic left is on the political equation.
Mm-hmm. Another headline, J.P. Morgan predicts $380 oil on Russian output cuts.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. And last week I had a collection of them where a week earlier, it was a bold statement, $120 crude. And then the White House, Biden, had uttered a statement that they were trying to prepare the public for a $200 oil shock. They want the price of crude to go up to $200, so everybody will go out and buy expensive electric cars. So that was that one, a $200. And I thought, well, that's pretty good. And then came the J.P. Morgan. 380. Well, in our work in the middle of June, we noted that the action for gasoline and natural gas had become rather speculative, and crude oil somewhat. So now our view was that the bear gets everything. That was the title, event, including energy prices. So if indeed we're in a post-bubble recession, the prices of most commodities are going to continue down. And crude oil, you got a lovely seasonality for gasoline, you know, late May, early June, which worked out this year. And then crude oil itself, man, for the last decade, seasonality highs on this would have been all over the place. So our view is that crude can dither around for a month or so yet, and then as a more of a contraction is discovered in the fall head down, and it can set seasonal lows in January, February. I might as well mention copper, too, which is already sold off a lot, but it can set a seasonal low in November. So, and then lumber can set at least seasonal low in October. So with the some of the commodities that have clear seasonal tendencies, there could be some weakness into, let's say, towards the end of the year. So.
Well, we have governments in North America that are officially against the oil and gas industry. People aren't looking for new oil. They're not looking for new natural gas. Won't that eventually lead to shortages? And hence
that's
$380.
Happened. Yes, yeah. The instant Biden got in office, he shut down as best he could, and he continues to shut down the oil and gas industry in the United States, and then the same on a more quiet basis with the Trudeau government in Canada. They just want to shut down oil and gas. And it's interesting that Quebec, the province of Quebec, gets something like $11 billion a year in what they call equalization payments, and more, beyond what any other province gets. And most of that comes from oil production in the western provinces. Now, at the same time, Quebec will not allow the pipeline to be extended, a serious pipeline to be extended into the eastern parts of Canada. So they're absolutely crazy. But what I think will change things hugely is the election on November the 8th in the U.S., the midterm elections, I think, looks like it's going to be a landslide for the Republicans in the House and perhaps a majority in the Senate. And then that will mark the change to all the ridiculous policies that have been coming out of the Democrat side, particularly the White House. So, you just can't get any stupider than to shut down oil and gas in the States and then encourage production from dictatorships such as Venezuela and Iran. I mean, it's some form of madness in which Biden is doing. But it's not that he's a demented old man. These are Democrat policies that are being pushed through the White House, and Obama's still running. It's Obama's third term. So now this can be changed when, with hardship in the past, the ordinary folk have looked at the source of the hardship. And with the governing classes living well and promising well, and there's been what we call popular uprisings. And so there's going to be a groundswell of opinion. Well, there is a groundswell of opinion against the insane intrusions by the Democrats in the States, and that begins to change with the election on November the 8th. And this will have a profound influence on forward pricing in the crude oil markets. And then perhaps somewhere in here in the fall, the Putin invasion exhausts its financings. Last week there was a headline about Russian defaulting on foreign debt payments for the first time since 1918, which means they ain't got no money. And then when energy prices fall further, they ain't going to have even less more money. I'm going to write an essay on the powers of persuasion of the double negative. I think it's out there. So, but at any rate, after that aside, with governments, ambitious governments fund themselves through two ways. Taxing to the limits, to the point of pain, which they're already doing. And then when that doesn't provide enough revenue, they shift over and do currency depreciation. the old inflation game, because that transfers wealth from the private sector to the public sector and right down, including those at the poverty level. The governments can get money from everybody through currency depreciation. So now if you go into a post-bubble contraction, tax revenues are going to drop, and the ability of the Fed or the Bank of Canada to depreciate the coinage will be shut down. So as I've said, Jim, from time to time, it'll be like a pub with no beer. The central bankers will no longer be able to issue their intoxicating amounts of credit. So, anyways, it seems highly probable, and it's to see a contraction become more severe and the public turn against authoritarian governments is going to be rather a pleasant entertainment in a bad time.
Headline, Turkey's inflation spirals towards 88%.
Yep, that's local inflation with their currency heading south big time. And the market forces will, of course, naturally raise local interest rates. And people are getting screwed all over the place. And those speculators who may be swift enough to participate in local rising prices, somewhere it'll stop. So, but it is a sign that in a post-bubble contraction, the senior currency becomes firm, and even going back to the great trader Thomas Gresham in the 1500s, pointed out to the, he acted for the British crown and its financial matters in the money market. Then the world's money market was in Antwerp. And Gresham, in many letters to the crown, which was Elizabeth I, outlined that it's absolutely impossible to service your debt obligations in the senior currency when your currency is weak. So he, at critical times, he was able to manipulate sterling up when it was time to make payments into Antwerp. And so this is what you got the problem here now, is it's the same thing. The whole world will essentially have a problem servicing debt in payable in New York, payable in U.S. dollars. They'll have to get their hands on dollars to service that debt. So you can say, Jim, that this huge debt that's due and payable in New York is essentially a short position on dollars. So you got to sell something in order to get a dollar in order to service your debt in New York. It's very, very straightforward. Anyways.
Another headline. Another crypto lender has stopped withdrawals as the crash continues in the cryptocurrency area.
Yeah. This, I thought, is a good way to wrap it up, because the first headline was about the BIS approving cryptos and bitcoins as a reserve unit. And then you got one here where a hitherto lender against positions in cryptos and bitcoins is itself becoming insolvent. So here's an asset that is making lenders already in the business insolvent, and the BIS is recommending that central banks can have a crypto or a Bitcoin as a part of their reserve. I mean, they're crazy. That's all there is to it.
Has Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies become the modern equivalent of the tulip craze that hit Holland back in the early 1600s?
Oh, no, it's big time. This is huge. Now, throughout history, you've had major percent gains from going from a penny mine discovery promotion, going from pennies to, say, $20 or $30. But no, the Bitcoin crypto is a huge market capitalization, and the percentage gains have been staggering, whereas the tulips was a mania by unsophisticated new investors, and the markets were made on chalkboards in taverns, and the authorities in Holland at the time warned speculators that this is outside of their rules and regulations, and settlements of contracts and everything else may be difficult. Be aware. So, no, Tulip Mania was a fabulous event, very brief, and when it crashed, it did force a recession at the time. But the Bitcoin crypto thing has been, I would say, without exception. It has been so big, with such huge price gains that in all of the history over the last 300 years, there's been nothing like it. So,
Well, Bitcoin, as we speak, is around $21,000. Its all-time high was $68,789. So
yes.
A bit of a drop.
Yep, and it ain't over yet. Because those things, as we discussed last year, it takes huge amounts of electricity to create the bitcoins, and it takes huge amounts of electricity to maintain them, and electricity is expensive. So whereas a Vancouver stock promotion, hell, you can create those damn things for 25 cents a share. And then the costs thereafter are just with the transfer company, the trust company, and the costs of running the business, which can be controlled. So, no, there's this. It's the internal costs of bitcoins will is something that eventually even the most strongest promoters still of will suddenly realize that, hey, this is endless, and give up in despair. So, but I often hope that out of it could become a currency, a huge market currency of constant value, or relatively constant value, but I don't know. The only way you're going to get that is the old tried and tested way of having your currency convertible into gold. It provides discipline upon the central bankers, and it provides a reasonably stable valuation. But the real price of gold, as we often discuss, changes. But it's a lot better to have a gold convertible currency than anything else. And I don't see, for the last few years, I've thought somebody would come out with a currency crypto Bitcoin thing that would be of relatively constant value. But I've given up on that. And the only way to do it is to have each important currency convertible into gold. That has been the best solution for a few thousand years.
Bob, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Yeah, Jim, good to be with you. And hey, have a good weekend. We've got a good weather forecast here.
Going to go to the Lions-Bombers game. Both teams undefeated. Could be the best CFL game of the year.
Exciting. Exactly. You'd have a beer or two with that?
Maybe not.
Oh, okay.
Be a purist. The tickets were expensive enough.
Oh, okay. Well, have fun at it, Jim.
My guest has been Bob Hoy. He's the Chief Investment Strategist for ChartsAndMarkets.com. He welcomes your questions. You can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.